Chapter 25, Dominican Republic. After the shortest possible visit in Puerto Rico, sleeping on a concrete floor in the house of a local surfer, I found myself in the Dominican Republic, trying to figure out how to get to the gym I'd gotten in touch with. The bus station was dirty and old. People were waiting on metal benches, watching rugby on a TV hanging on the wall. A small shop sold sodas, snacks, and children's toys. To the left of the entrance was a sales desk. Behind a glass wall, four people sat in old office chairs with old computers selling tickets. I walked up to one of them to get my ticket. Each counter had two holes in the window for people to talk through. One of them was above my head and one in the height of my crotch. I could pick between standing on my toes or bending over, and the girl working behind the glass didn't bother much leaning forward to hear me. I was inventing entirely new ways to look ridiculous as I stood there and shouted through the holes, switching between standing on my toes and squatting to try and settle on what holes she could hear me best through. I was sure everyone behind me laughed at the stupid tourist trying to order tickets with homemade Spanish words. Joe, a Canadian guy, picked me up at the last bus stop. First thing in the car, he warned me about trying to buy any form of drugs during my stay, as I would probably be sentenced to life in prison on the spot. The closest I've ever come to being a drug smuggler was in Havana Airport in Cuba. I had checked in my bag and was in the line to board the plane as a uniformed guy came running and stopped me. When he confirmed that I was indeed Mr. Graugart, he firmly asked me to come with him. We walked through corridors that looked like they were taken right out of a horror movie, and behind a wooden door with a smoky glass window in it, my bag was put on a table in a small room. Behind it sat a big guy in a uniform, and in the shadow in the corner stood another one. They looked scary as hell, and the one old light bulb over the table didn't add to the coziness of the atmosphere. The big guy said something in Spanish and pointed at the back. I tried to explain to him that I didn't understand the language, but with his angry gestures, I understood he wanted me to open my bag. I was pretty calm until it suddenly struck me. What if someone had put something in my bag? My heart stopped. They checked every square inch of it for drugs, but luckily there were none, and my nightmare of spending the rest of my life in a Cuban prison was called off. I missed out on a great chance to learn Spanish, but it was okay. Extreme Hotel Cabarete, the sign read as Joe pulled into the parking lot. Joe and Papo, the two guys running the local jiu-jitsu club, were managing the place and had set me up with a room for $20 a night. It was nice and spacious. There had been a BJJ competition during the day, and I arrived right in the middle of the after party. I dropped off my backpack and walked outside, trying to find Joe again. About 100 people were having a big party in an outdoor bar. According to those religious people with the signs in New York, that night was supposed to be the end of the world. At least it would end with a good party, it seemed, as the many people in the little bar were having a great time. I needed a change of clothes after the long day of traveling, so I went back to my room. On the way, I noticed a big hole in the ground next to the bar. It was a skateboard ramp with a metal roof and a wooden fence, covered with palm leaves around it. I looked down and saw that the entire bottom of the ramp was covered with jiu-jitsu mats. I remembered seeing some photos on their website back home, planning the trip, but I never really noticed that they were actually training in an outdoor skateboard ramp. I wish I had been there earlier and seen the competition. It had basically been white belts only, so there was no one I could compete against anyways, and I had made the decision to spend a day in Puerto Rico instead. I got myself a drink. Joe and Papo, the only guys I knew at the party, were nowhere to be found. A very drunk American guy lived in the room next to me and was sitting outside his door with his laptop as I came by to get some money from my backpack. He introduced himself as Glenn and asked if I wanted to go with him and some of the others to a casino. That was my cue, and before I knew it, we were partying all night like it indeed was the end of the world. Now, you might think that the world ended that night and the book stops here. Think again. My room was hot like an oven when I woke up. There was supposed to be a seminar at 10, but I had slept till 11. I put on some shorts and walked out the door. The sunlight was bright and the air fresh, especially compared to what I'd been sleeping in. As I walked around the corner of the building, I stopped in amazement. It had been so dark the night before that I had no idea the bar with the party where I spent several hours was literally right on a beautiful Caribbean beach with perfect white sand, palm trees, and clear blue water. The water was full of kite surfers, people were hanging out in couches in the bar, nice music was playing, girls in bikinis were in the swimming pool, and right in the middle of it, about 40 people in geese were training jiu-jitsu in an outdoor descended skateboard ramp. The world must indeed have ended the night before, since I obviously woke up in heaven. I looked to see if I could spot Jesus somewhere in the bar, but he was nowhere to be seen. The place was amazing. They even had CrossFit, Spanish lessons, and a fully equipped area for circus training. It was definitely a place where I could spend more than a few days. Despite being mostly white belts, everyone on the mat looked really good. A seriously large brown belt guy asked me to roll. His name was Abraham. He had a deep voice, a game that was super tight, and he was really technical and moved fluidly for such a big guy. I had nothing on him, and he tapped me out left and right as he felt like it. I told him about my trip and my plans to go to the World Championships to compete. He was going there as well, and expected to face his nemesis, a Danish guy, in the finals once again. It was Alexander Trent, who trained in another gym in my city, just a kilometer away from mine, who had beaten Abraham several times. My new tall friend was a nice guy, and he invited me to come stay and train with him in Santo Domingo, the capital in the south. I had dinner with Papo. He was a charismatic guy with a worn-out brown belt and a clear purpose. He wanted to help the young local boys to have some opportunities in life, and he did it through jiu-jitsu. Now and then, a few tourists from the hotel joined in on the training, but the majority of the people training there were locals in their teens. Here, society was completely divided between rich and poor. There were some very, very rich people and some very, very poor. It was an easy place to get into trouble with drugs, gangs, and stuff like that, Papo told me. The kids there needed an alternative in career opportunities. He seemed to know everyone on the island and had a deep reach into the local communities. A friend of his was selling fried chicken in one of the poorest areas of town. Knowing every boy running around on the streets, he acted like a talent scout for the jiu-jitsu team, convincing the young wild ones to take up training instead of getting into trouble. Trouble in that place would very likely lead to a bullet in the head one day down the road. None of the kids could afford to pay for training, but if they stayed away from drugs and alcohol and showed up to every class, they would be allowed to train for free. Some of them worked as spearfishers or in the fields, and they paid with fish or vegetables instead of money. The more privileged guys on the team paid for training, well aware that they were sponsoring their teammates, viewing it as a donation to benefit their local community. I hadn't had a chance to train with the local guys yet, as there had been so many visitors from out of town for the tournament and seminar. Papo assured me that I would get my chance the next evening when all the guests had left. I spent most of my days in the little beach hotel, just relaxing. I had gotten used to the slow-paced days on the boat and already felt exhausted from the short trip to Cabarete through Puerto Rico. It was nice to do nothing for a while and just hang out on the beach and by the pool. I took motorcycle taxis to town to get water bottles and basic food supplies for my room. There were a few more tourists there, but it was still a pretty undeveloped place. I had quickly gotten some friends at the hostel and enjoyed talking to people there. I wouldn't mind hanging out in a place like that for a little while. Joe asked me how long I was planning to stay as we sat in the little bar by the beach and had a juice. I had no idea. I'd better start figuring it out. I didn't want to worry about it, but just relax and enjoy the beautiful little place I'd found. It was late evening. Wet season had just begun, and the heavy rain was pouring down hard. The open-air skateboarding halfpipe was kept dry by the tin roof, and the wind was blocked by palm tree leaves weaved into the wooden railing that surrounded the ramp. About 20 boys in their late teens were sitting in a half circle on the mat, listening intensely to Papo, eagerly absorbing every experienced word of wisdom that he spoke. A single light bulb in the ceiling provided the light and cast long shadows of young, ambitious boys onto the mats and the curved skateboard ramp around us. No one said a word. I could see in their eyes, steadily fixed on their instructor, that they looked up to him. His words inspired and shaped them. The rain was drumming on the roof and soaking the beach, but no one seemed to notice it. Just like no one took notice of whether the person sitting next to them was from a different part of society than themselves. In everyday life, those people never met, but on the mats, everyone was together. The rich and the poor. There was even a Haitian guy, and there is notoriously always bad blood between the Dominicans and Haitians, Papo told me. Nobody cared. Jiu-jitsu was all that mattered. It was dark outside the ramp, and the palm trees around us were moving in the heavy wind. Papo was giving a long speech, complimenting the boys on their effort in the competition. They had taken most of the gold medals, and he was visibly proud. I couldn't understand the Spanish, but it was clear to me what he was talking about. The energy and enthusiasm coming from these young boys was so dense in the air that I expected lightning to strike from the storm above us at any moment. A lot of them didn't have many opportunities in life, but this was definitely one. Jiu-jitsu could create a path for them, just like it had done for me, in a very different place on Earth. Rolling with them was as intense as I'd imagined. They were very tough, and I was amazed by their strength. Manual labor or a life of kite surfing had made its mark on their bodies, and I had my hands full trying to handle both their physical and mental strength. It wasn't every day they had a visitor coming to train with them, and everyone wanted to have a go at me to see if they could tap me out. Luckily for me, the humid weather made everyone sweat a lot, which vastly aided my guillotine grip. A local police officer had joined the training for the first time that evening. It was a very big thing, a milestone for Papo's social project. I'm sure that on numerous occasions, him and some of the very boys he got to roll with must have been in conflicts on the poor streets of town, staring at each other with adrenaline-pumped eyes for long, heartbeat-stopping seconds, anticipating hell to break loose any moment. That night, they met on neutral ground and learned to respect each other through jiu-jitsu. He became an equal. At the end of the training, everyone lined up. Pablo asked the police officer to come forward, and all the boys showed their respect for his courage to show up with a synchronized bow and a loud us. I asked Pablo to tell these guys that they were the toughest group of white belts I'd met on my entire trip. It was true. They were the toughest. I hoped that they would stick with it, then it would only be a matter of time before they would see some really big results. I think that many of the gyms I've been to in tourist areas are too focused on catering to expats and tourists, also known as those who have money. This place was different. Pablo seemed very aware how he could have a positive influence on the divided society around him. The people from the rich and poor parts of town never interacted in daily life. But in that skateboard ramp by the beach, they came together as a team. All were equal, all fighting under the same flag. Boys from the richest neighborhoods trained, competed, and drilled techniques together with the boys from the poorest. Strong, unlikely friendships were being forged through sweat, blood, and bruises. I thought about how my own gym at home was a social tool as well, albeit on a different scale and in a completely different society. It was only a week and a half before the World Championships, and I decided where to go on my way there. California was far away and in the opposite direction to Brazil, where I was planning to head. I was tempted by the thought of skipping the competition and using the time and money to travel around the Caribbean and South America instead, but it was almost like a pilgrimage thing to do and had been on my wish list since I planned the trip at home. I was lying in my bed all morning, trying to get myself together to decide whether to go or not. I eventually decided to go for it and cram in as many destinations as possible on the way, getting as much out of the detour as I could. I was becoming a master of finding cheap plane tickets and crazy routes. Within an hour, I'd cross-checked all the travel sites, flight times, airport transfers, and email with invitations to come visit. The route was set, and it was ambitious. In 10 days, I would go to Costa Rica, then to Oakland to visit my old friend Soren, on to Las Vegas to train with Martin Kampmann, and finally to Los Angeles for the competition. My old friend Chris Howder had just emailed me to confirm that I could stay with him there. I thought to myself how tired I would be when I was going to step on those mats. It was a crazy schedule that would honor the hectic pace I had been traveling at since New York. My credit card was red hot when I finished with all the flight bookings. It was nice to be able to relax in my head without having to worry about when to leave and where to go. While having lost some weight on the trip, I still had a bit to go if I wanted to reach lightweight, which was under 76 kilos with the gi. I decided that with all the training I was going to do leading up to the competition, it would be way too difficult and stressful to cut weight. So I signed up for middleweight, went straight to the beach bar, and ordered a large burger. Later, I knocked on the door of my neighbor Glenn to check if he wanted to go with me to the beach and check out the waves. He had an old green moped that looked like something the Germans would drive during the Second World War. I squeezed my butt onto the edge of the seat behind him, and he warned me to not let my sandal get caught in the chain as we got on the road towards the water. The weather was perfect, and the waves looked gentle for beginners like us. Little wooden houses on the beach rented out surfboards, and we got us some ace-looking ones. There was something special about the feeling of getting onto that board in the water for the first time. I hadn't surfed since Hawaii, and I really missed it. I had even dreamed about it at night. It felt great to be in the water again, and I was comfortable with the waves, catching many of them during the day. The last one was perfect and took me all the way to the shore. We were in the water for hours before the waves started to die out a bit and we decided to head back. I jumped on the back of the moped and Glenn said he knew a shortcut through a little jungle road. The old machine did its best to carry us through the narrow sandy road. Glenn was a kitesurfing instructor at the hotel and had been in the Dominican Republic for 5 months. His original plan had been to keep traveling, but once he got there, he never left. The moped was struggling to carry us up the little hill, so I had to jump off and walk. Glenn was pulling the throttle and giving it all it had in first gear while pushing along on the ground with his feet in order to get it up to the top. "I can't stop now," he shouted. "Get on, get on!" I couldn't stop laughing at the whole scene, and it didn't help when he finally picked up speed and I was running behind him with my legs spread out trying to jump onto the little seat. We were surrounded by beautiful palm trees, birds singing, and gentle waves pushing against a small deserted beach. A horse stood next to the road and looked at us, probably thinking that we looked like two complete idiots. I smiled. It felt fucking great that I wasn't sitting in front of a computer in an office at home. After a cruel 6-hour-long bus trip, I made it to Santo Domingo to stay with Abraham for a day. I felt at home on the couch in his girlfriend's apartment as they cooked dinner and I enjoyed the warm breeze of fresh air coming from the window, mixed with the smell of food from the kitchen. Steak, salad, and water. A feast for athletes. That would be Abraham. I was more of a drunk, homeless bum who just happened to have signed up for the world's biggest jiu-jitsu competition. There were a few black belts on the mat in the gym that evening. I felt confident when we sparred. The relaxing pace of Caporetta had been good for my body. I'd gotten lots of sleep and there had been no stress from moving around too much. One of the big black belts totally crushed me, but I didn't mind. I found myself feeling very calm under pressure, something that I had definitely improved during the trip. Being stuck in mound or side control bottom didn't worry me. At some point, I would either tap or escape, and then everything would be comfortable again. I rolled with a handful of other guys and felt really good. The loop choke I'd been working on for a long time started to solidify as one of my strongest moves. It was Abraham's last training session at home before going to the competition in California. He knew that he was most likely going to meet his Danish rival again, and that it would be a tough challenge to beat him. I could see in his eyes that his focus was on that one match. All the other opponents would not be a problem. He only had one person to beat to become the world champion, Alexander Trans. By the end of the evening, he was rolling non-stop against all the high-level belts. As he got more and more tired, his game fell apart. He was being pushed to his absolute limit for one last time before the most important tournament of his career so far. I jumped in a few rounds and gave him all I got. I shouted at him to not give up as he tried to escape my side control. He burst out his last energy in a loud scream, but he still couldn't escape. The gentle giant was all out of energy. The time ran out and he didn't get up, but just lay there on his stomach, face down, nothing left. Everyone tapped his back and wished him good luck. I really hoped for him that he would succeed this time, and I couldn't wait to compete alongside him in California a week later. Oh yeah, the competition. It seemed like there was so much else going on first. While Abraham would be resting and training in California, I would be visiting Costa Rica, San Francisco, and Las Vegas before finally going to Long Beach for the World Championships. It was a tight schedule, especially before such a big competition, but I had many people to visit and wanted to get moving down to South America as soon as possible instead of staying too long in the US. The next day, I would be sitting on a plane towards Costa Rica and 10 days of extreme pace travel. I wouldn't have a second to think about the competition before I actually stood on the mat, clapping hands with my opponent and looking for that first initial grip.